This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi. Welcome to the second episode of US licensed marriage and family therapist Dr. John Ben Loy's monthly show. He's back with me. And this week we'll be discussing something called dynasting, which is a term that you apparently have coined yourself, Dr. John Ben.
Yes, I have.
And it is all about, it describes the practice of building, maintaining and growing the power and resources of a family-run business within the family lineage.
That's right.
And what problems or benefits arise from this management of power? Are you talking, are you going to be talking from experience, Dr. John Ben?
Maybe.
Okay.
What kind of experience?
You don't have to say yes or no, but that's all right. As long as you are able to throw yourself into it, I think we'll be able to resonate better.
I don't know if I can ever resist throwing myself. I'm not throwing myself.
I'm taking on the role of the therapist. So let's go.
All right. Yes, Dr.
Meera. Our phone lines are open. Give us a call if you have a question. 03-77-109-000. Or even if you'd like to just share your experience, if you, you know, have been in a similar situation, why not? We'd like to hear from you.
Sure.
So what's this dynasting all about? You've written a whole dissertation. I mean, it's pages and pages long.
It's hundreds of pages.
I tried reading it. Didn't get past chapter 5.
Chapter 5 is the grain, really.
Okay. Yes. And that is all about the culture.
Chapter 5 is actually the theory. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what my dissertation was about developing a theory that applied specifically to Chinese Malaysian family firms.
Okay.
And so how I came about doing that was because well, here we go. I'm throwing myself in right away,
okay,
aren't I? Because I
he's going to confess.
Yes, I confess. I come from a family-owned business,
okay,
and so I have a lot of personal experience, having grown up in one, and didn't really feel like I fit in the business. I don't think I ever was a business person in that full sense of that word.
What are you, third generation?
I am second. I am second, and not involved in the business.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's weird, because based on what I was reading, you had said that these succession plans run, say, about one generation, two generations, the most, and you're just second generation.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very common observation in multiple languages around the world that the family business, family wealth doesn't last past three generations.
Yep.
And that's absurd. In all human cultures. So part of my dissertation was trying to understand what's going on for family businesses in Malaysia. And the way that I went about doing that was basically just to use a really good methodology that goes into the data or the people, interviewing, observing, participating with them, to see what are some of the main concerns that they have.
Mm-hmm. And how many families did you work with?
Well, I worked with about 30 people, individuals. That represents less families because some of them were founders and successors, and also participants. And then after that, I also did, you know, reading. The data also came from articles, books, people who are family business owners, wrote books and things like that.
Okay. What did you learn about the history of this? And why is it so prevalent amongst the Chinese families?
Well, let's define what I discovered a little bit.
Which is dynasting.
Yes.
Okay.
I made up that word.
I know. I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
Well, now you may just be able to go on to urbandictionary.com.
You may just have to include the Oxford Dictionary. You know, when you have a PhD, you're allowed to do things like make words.
Okay.
Or unless you're a famous singer, like Unbreak My Heart or something like that. You know, you can make up words.
Some of us who performed with Andre Bocelli.
Who might you be talking about?
I'm going to digress here.
Okay.
I am really going to digress. And this probably make us understand why you weren't part of the family business. Because you were singing.
That's right. You sang
in the choir
that
backed up Andre Bocelli.
On Sunday night.
On Sunday night.
Yes.
Yeah, the 5th of May, the day we all went to the polls.
That's right.
What was that experience like?
It was exhausting. I mean, I was up at 6 a.m. trying to, you know, get ready to go to the polls and do my work. And then after that, I had I was there by 1 o'clock, you know, and then we had rehearsals in the afternoon. By the time Andrea Bocelli showed up, I was about to leave and go to sleep.
Why, was he late?
No, it's just, you know, he showed up at 4:30 to do the rehearsals and things like that. But it was fun. It was really fun. Mm-hmm. What I did was I sat back, and when they were singing, I imagined myself being personally entertained by Andrea Bocelli and the MPO, and they were personally entertaining me, and I was just enjoying myself.
Yeah, but you had to sing as well.
Oh no, no, that was my privilege.
Okay,
I was able to sing with them, kind of like a karaoke, you know.
No, hardly. But it was a 16-pack orchestra. I mean, a choir. Am I correct?
Or
was
it 60? Yeah, 60 plus the MPO. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a beautiful orchestra. But you brought that point up because earlier I talked about not fitting.
That's right.
The family, and yes, you know, I think as a person I am I was and probably and am a therapist. I'm a scholar. I'm a musician, and that's who I am. And it didn't fit with my father, who said that okay, you can come back and teach piano and earn a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of like a put down. I actually wrote that on my first blog article, johnmenloy.com, and shared that. But eventually, I think in my own family business, we worked through certain things. We're still sound. We're still, you know, doing well. But as for me, I am more involved with the family side now, the family relationship side, which is so important. To sustainability across more than three generations.
Okay.
You really need the family bonding. And that's part of the reason why I did this study, to look at first I wanted to look at founder-successor conflict. But as I was researching it and the methodology I was using, it forced me to really pay attention to what they were really concerned about. Mm-hmm. And what they were concerned about was not just the conflict. That was my concern. Because that was my interest.
Yep.
What they're really interested about is building this dynasty. And this dynasty building, which I call dynasting, is about growing. Well, first of all, you build the business, right? You maintain the size, right? And then you continue to grow it across two generations.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially building little dynasties.
Right.
Yeah. And that seemed to be the main key interest in the participants that I was interviewing. And so I followed that sort of key idea, and eventually it came into this idea that I came up with, which is called dynasty.
Dynasty.
Yeah.
Did you find common threads as you spoke to these 30 people?
Absolutely. In fact, the only way you can generate the theory is to have a lot of people say the same thing. So when you begin to find, you know, okay, this is being said, this is being said, this is being said, the same things are being said over and over again, you start to think there is something going on here. If enough people say the same thing, it's probably happening.
Yep. And, well, and it resonated with you.
That's right. And so you can build a hypothesis around that, and then you can test it.
Okay. So would you say then your findings are pretty accurate?
Okay, so part of the theory building is you can do a next step after you build a theory, because you have a whole bunch of hypotheses, and then you can test the hypotheses.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, that's another dissertation or many pieces of work.
Mm-hmm.
But then what the theory, how you can test the robustness or the grab of the theory is when you mention something to someone who's in it, they say, yes, that's it. That explains everything I've always thought about so succinctly.
Yep.
And you know it has grab, it has fit.
Right.
So it's sort of more personal validation of your theory rather than empirical scientific.
Right. Based on what you've said earlier, there seems to be a clash between the family system and the business system for you.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Could you explain? Give me an example.
Mm. I think just in general, not about dynasty per se, not about building the dynasties, but family businesses in general have a clashing of values. Yeah, in the family side, you have relationships, harmony, getting along, providing, giving, loving, nurturing. That's family. On business side, you have competition, growth, you know, that all that kind of thing is sort of by merit. And so when you have the business values, what makes business successful, and then when you have what makes families successful, that can clash. Mm-hmm. And so family businesses face these sort of contrasting values, and many times it creates problems on the family side or on the business side.
Did you find that at home over dinner, there was this clash, or, you know, you couldn't separate family, you know, relationship and the business relationship? Did everyone bring back business
when
to the house as well?
When you're growing up, that's right. I mean, when you're growing up with a strong patriarch who is, all of his life has been spent on building up the business, or it could be a couple, both mother and father, you're immersed in it. You don't know any other reality. You don't really know what it's like not to talk about business in the dinner table.
I don't agree with you, and you did. I remember reading it about reading about how you described it as being very patriarchal.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel the Chinese women play a huge role in these businesses.
Yes,
they're not just sitting around.
No,
and not doing anything.
No.
So,
but who essentially is the head? The figurehead is often the patriarchs. Now, you also have to look at who I was studying. So I was studying people now in their 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. Those are the patriarchs. So we're talking about a generation ago, or maybe even a generation and a half ago, depending on how old you are.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, yes, the women played a very important role as matriarchs in the home. Without them, it couldn't work. Without them taking care of the family, and many of them also learned to do business, like my mother, for instance, took care of the books.
Yep.
Now my wife takes care of the books.
You patriarch.
New patriarch.
There you go, the evidence.
New sort of, half Western, half traditional
really?
Chinese patriarch.
And so there are such patriarchs as well.
And those are the successors now. People in their 40s, 50s, they've now sort of taken over the business. They are like new patriarchs. They're not really Westernized. They're sort of hybrids. They're still kind of patriarchal, but not like their fathers were.
Right. But they still are.
if you want to fight it, Mira, I will join hands with you.
You just said you're more Western patriarch. You're still a patriarch.
I am a weirdo. Depends on who you are. I will think differently.
We have our phone lines open. Please give us a call. Dr. John Ben Loy, help me out here.
I forgot I was on air for a second. I was just myself.
Help me out. I've got a whole lot of questions, but if you have a question, give us a call. 0377-109000. We're discussing dynasting, which is a word Dr. John Ben coined on his own. And it's basically the practice of Malays and Chinese family-run businesses and how they actually operate.
Mm-hmm.
He's throwing himself into the interview. So if you have a question, well, give us a call once again, 0377-109000.
You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture, and it's Mira Sivasuthi, US licensed marriage and family therapist, with me, Dr. John Ben Loy. We're discussing dynasting, which is the practice of Malaysian Chinese family run businesses. We have quite a number here in Malaysia still, the YTLs. Mm-hmm. Can you name me some others?
Some others?
Yeah.
Like the Loy family?
Yes, the Loy family. I didn't want to mention it, but yes, the Loy family. The black sheep who decided to sing.
I'm a singing black sheep. Yes, if you want me to confess, my father was Tan Sri Loy.
Yes.
Yes, that's
the
right.
The MBF group, am
that's
I correct?
Right.
Okay,
that's right.
All right then. He's finally come out and said it. He's not around anymore, is he?
No, he isn't.
Okay. As you said, the business is still running for your family.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think it's sort of come to a stage where it stands the chance of maybe losing that whole succession plan? Or that succession plan may not actually go on.
Yes, it's a very likely scenario, especially once you're hitting into the third generation. The values that the patriarch or the founder, let's say the founder, had put in rests well in the second generation, if it goes well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this dynasty that's been developed. Yeah, the second generation is running it. But the third generation is removed from those same values. And then if you're not careful to really work hard at it at the second generation, you can lose the third generation. They can become entitled. They don't have the vision of the founder. They don't really understand what's going on. So in my own family, we do a lot of work in the second generation now to talk. You know, every month we meet to talk about family business. Some of the things that we're doing now, we've just developed a family constitution.
Right. And you led all of this, I can guess.
No, the new patriarch, who's not me, led it.
You still are. You're the Western patriarch, remember?
I'm not a patriarch. I'm the brother of the patriarch.
Okay, all right, if you insist.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did contribute in the sense that I suppose maybe I'm the scholar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did my PhD, whereby I did a lot of research on family businesses. I was trained, and I also consult family businesses. And so I was able to kind of help us to come together on that. And we've been doing this now actively for about 2 years, two and a half years now. But that process started about 8-9 years ago.
Okay. Why did you think, or why did the patriarch think that this process was actually important?
No, my father had already passed away in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't really talk about this until 2002. Okay. I happened to attend a course on family business by the Family Firm Institute, which is in the U.S., and that was the first time I saw this concept of family and business as two overlapping circles,
mm-hmm.
with different value sets.
Yep.
Yeah, and how they clash, you know, and then how can you actually do it well so that the family business can survive beyond three generations. And a lot of it has to do with really paying attention to the family dynamics, the relationships, which get lost. It's a lot of work. So I'm actually a resource person for the Family Business Network Asia, which is headquartered in Singapore, mm-hmm. and that started only a few years ago. And we've been pretty active as members of that.
And how far do you think your family has come over the last 2 years?
Very far, mm-hmm. very far. I'm very pleased to say that we're doing well.
Okay.
And we hope that, well, at least I'll speak for myself, I hope that more families would sort of become aware of the importance of building good family relations for the betterment, not only of their own business, but also for the community. Because you're caring about your family, you're caring about the future generations, you also care about the land,
yep.
in which you live.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. We have LTY on the line. How are you today, LTY?
Hello, fine. Today, topic is quite interesting. That's why I try to get engaged in this. Good afternoon, Mira and Ben.
Good afternoon.
I have one question.
Yes.
Am I right to say that women are more assertive and there is always a conflict of ideas and interests among them, just like in a family of sister-in-law? That's from my experience. Finding that in a family there are too many female living together, there's always a problem, right? Can you kindly tell us something about this?
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, LTY. Very relevant question.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I will assume that that's in the context of family business.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly women have their opinions, and in a family whereby women are more respected, they are going to give their voices. In fact, in my research, I also talked about the role of women and how they sort of function. For the most part, I think if we're looking at a more traditional family, I imagine LTY is a Chinese man.
I
do not know. Okay. Then I would say it's important to think about listening to these women members. It is unlikely, for the most part, I could be wrong, depending on families to family, it is unlikely that the woman wants to dominate with that sort of I am in charge, sort of here I am, everybody listen to me, I am the head. Less likely that that's going to happen. But rather, they see things that the men don't see. And so they're saying, enough is enough, you got to listen to us. Because we're seeing things that you're not seeing. It's really important to listen to what they're saying. It could also be that maybe what they see is not as practical, say, compared to those who are maybe out in the business. I don't know. There are all kinds of family businesses, mm-hmm. and different people that do different things. But you want to hear what the women have to say.
Okay.
It's really, really important.
Sure. And yeah. There's also this thing where in Asian families, you find that the patriarch's wife,
mm-hmm.
would possibly have more of a say compared to the other wives in the family. Do you find that could be a problem? It comes out of respect for the elders and, you know, the eldest son and his wife.
Yes.
Does that also affect the dynamics
yes.
of the family?
Yes, the matriarch, you know, has sort of power, you know, next to the patriarch, so long as it's only one matriarch.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes,
oh, yes.
Sometimes there's more, especially if you're talking about the older generation.
Yes.
Yeah. And yes, definitely. I think what's really important as a family therapist, because I'm also a clinician, it's hard work, really, to sit a family down and be able to talk through differences. But it can be done. It can be done. It was done in my family. We had conflicts. We had fights too. I myself, you know, you ask my siblings, they'll tell me, he's the one that gets angry all the time.
why am I not surprised?
I'm dealing with people fighting in my office all day long, Mira. So I guess some of that
so you
passes
vent
over.
At home.
Yeah.
There's another thing that you talk about a lot in the book, Dr. John Benn, and that's about dynasting across cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose that applies very much to you because you've also married someone who's not Asian.
That's right.
Right. So
how did
that affect the dynamics of the family? And of course, the business.
Mm-hmm. Dynasting across cultures is a phenomenon that I discovered for Chinese-Malaysian families, and could be more than just Chinese-Malaysian families, but specifically in that a lot of the Chinese families that started doing well in the business then sent their children abroad for education.
Mm-hmm.
So within one generation, there's a sudden shift in values from a very traditional Chinese, kind of very practical, kind of down-to-earth kind of Chinese values. Suddenly, you are, you know, you speak with a British accent or like myself with an American accent or Australian accent, and you have different thoughts, and then you're mingling with, you know, Caucasian women and things like that. You strive for independence, sort of freedom of voice. You want a hug.
Mm.
You know, you want that emotional bonding.
Yeah.
So coming back into the family business, because the patriarch calls you, come back, you know, take over, because that was all along the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come back and you have these Western ideas, whereas the patriarch is sort of expects you to just kowtow to him for the next 30 years and just do what he tells you.
Mm-hmm.
There is a huge clash.
Yes.
And that's what I experienced as well for my family. That was a clash, even though my father was actually quite open-minded in many ways. But at the core, you're still if you know, you still have your Asian-ness.
Yeah.
You know, it's your matrix. It's
course.
The way you think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it? How did you deal with that?
I was a little bit weird. I called myself a weirdo earlier. I think you know, I did my MBA in Cambridge University, and there I learned about systems thinking, from Peter Senge, and I realized that if I didn't do something in light of what's going on that was not functioning very well, change is not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually confronted my father, and I asked him, I said, you know, do you have any idea if your children really want to take over your business? We had the best 5-minute heart-to-heart talk that day. And I felt like when I left, I felt like I grew up. I'm a man of my own. And subsequently, a year or so later, I left and pursued my own ambitions.
Right.
With his blessing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Filial piety is something that's very prevalent in
yes,
Chinese
that's right.
families.
Respecting your parents.
That's right.
Yeah.
Were you in conflict with that at any stage?
Absolutely. I mean, I came from a Chinese school,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so, yes, you have to respect your father. So here I was wanting to become a cast member of Cats. Andrew Lloyd Webber's Cats. But no, you're not allowed. You have to come home and do business. And that's what I did.
For how long?
About 7 years all in, plus an MBA. Can you imagine? I even went and got an MBA from Cambridge, nevertheless.
7 years is a long time.
I ran a business.
Okay.
Yeah, I ran a company called Digital Security Systems, like, you know, fixing the nuts and bolts of security alarms.
So
and
was
all
it
that.
Part of the family business or just
yes,
something?
Yes, it was part of the group. It was a very small company, 15 people.
Mm-hmm.
And that company actually was in trouble. And I took it over and turned it around.
Did you want to take it because you wanted to have something of your own to build and grow?
Just to learn and to prove that I could do it, because my two brothers before me did it.
Mm.
They jumped into the deep end of the swimming pool, so to speak, and then they swam and they were able to do it, so I had to do the same. Mm-hmm. So, okay, let me run something that I know nothing about.
Yeah. And how did you do?
I did well. I found a really good general manager and hired him. And he taught me how the industry works.
You cheat.
No, actually, it's not. That's exactly how it's done. People just don't know it. You hire good people and you manage them well. That's the key.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I have an MBA, I can say.
We're discussing dynasting, is the practice of Malays and Chinese family-run businesses. Our phone lines are open, actually. I don't know why people are not interested. I mean, the number is 03-77-10-9000. I'm sure you've got a lot of burning questions. You know, it just doesn't apply to just Chinese families, actually, Dr. John Ben.
Maybe they get more interested. We talked about dynasting and political families.
Oh, yes.
Oh, ooh. Yeah.
But no.
Stay away. I mean, we can talk about Singapore.
Okay.
Or USA.
Next year, which family are you going to pick on in Singapore? Oh, the very prominent one.
Yes, yes. Mm. So dynasting, this act of building dynasties.
You're absolutely correct. We're going to do that in the next show. Okay?
Yeah, although I don't know very much about it because I had to restrict my research to a certain population. So I restricted it to Chinese family businesses because that's what I knew and that's who I could access. But you see this in music family, you know, Hollywood entertainment families, the Jacksons, mm-hmm. right? The Osmonds, those kinds of examples.
Yep.
Okay, those are very old examples. But those are families and they are a dynasty.
Yep. Which also says something that, you know, the younger generation is becoming more and more multicultural and modernized. And
yes.
Hence the reason why probably you don't see much of it anymore, isn't it? Justin Bieber's not going to make his son sing, do you think?
I don't know. That actually depends on what family means now. In the past, the family really localized resources. Yeah. But the more society takes care of individuals, the less important families become. So this phenomenon that I call dynasting may not see it. In my own mind, how it makes sense is you may not see it in very wealthier, more socialist type countries, mm-hmm. you know. But I could be wrong. I have to do research about that.
Okay. Interesting. We have Ong on the line. How are you today?
Hello?
Hi, Ong. Would you like to share something with us?
I'm surprised. I don't recall giving up my name, but I could have done it. Anyway.
That's all right.
Nice to connect.
There are millions of Ongs around. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not concerned at all about that. Well, I was in Italy. I was in Italy a short time ago and had a heart-to-heart conversation with a business owner and patriarch. He was a founding member of a Chicago-based Italian family business,
mm-hmm.
and I was happy to connect with him because, in a sense, I could. Have that conversation with him speaking to my own father, mm-hmm. because then I could understand his point of view, because he had also two sons, same situation that I find myself in,
mm-hmm.
And the children not wanting to continue with the family business.
Mm-hmm.
So he's telling me his concerns and his lament and why are things, you know, he's telling me why you know how he's seeing his side of the story, and that gave me an opportunity to also open up and tell him, you know, not necessarily how his sons are feeling, but how I felt too in a situation that my father is, you know, having the same kind of concerns that he has.
Sure.
That now I'm working in a fifth year now in family business.
Mm-hmm.
Previously. Had very little to do with the family business.
Uh-huh.
You know, values, ownership kind of issues.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that was very striking for me is he kept saying that this is for the benefit of his children. This mm-hmm. is for the benefit of the family. This is for their benefit. There's a repeating theme that he's doing all this, you know, his sacrifices, his hard work, building up the businesses for the second generation.
Mm-hmm.
But then I threw him a question that which I've always wanted to ask any founding member of family business, is that are you going to impart, or are you ready to part with ownership of the
business?
Business, mm-hmm. Yes, and not post-mortem, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was something that he found startling. He said, you know, why would you even ask that? You know, it's yours in the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's yours in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yes, you could say that. But this is then something that as a employee and not an employer, I mean, you can say, you know, yes, you're a manager, you're a CEO, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just not the same thing as having something of your own. This is not the, you know, end all of all employment arrangements,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
mm-hmm.
it certainly isn't such, you know, it's not the key feature of any conflict with family businesses, but it is a key point, you know. It's the situation here with myself as an example, because my father is not, you know, he keeps talking about setting up a succession plan whereby I won't end up owning any of the share, but, you know, I will be assured of a job and so on. So the question is always this, you know, if it's for the benefit, so why are founding fathers so difficult to see themselves giving up shares of the company even to their own children?
Yeah.
And that you couldn't answer me.
Yeah. Well, if you want some of my thoughts.
Please.
The founders letting go is probably one of the more important questions that are being asked by family business researchers and family business people. In the literature, you'll hear a lot about the family founders, family business founders, and this is sort of fear of death. Yeah, if I let go of my business, I have built everything of my identity. My whole identity is in my business. And so my children is also a part of me. And if I let go of the business, in essence, I let go of me. And that intertwining of identity with the business is a mixed bag of both, you know. It helped them to build that. They helped them to build and it motivated them to build the business. But at the same time, it stops them from being able to let go well. There is a very large family business here in Malaysia, and in my interview, I talked to one of the successors who said that the successor is a woman who said that my father at 70 said, okay, bye-bye, gone. I'm leaving the country. I'm going to retire. Don't talk to me about business.
That's rare.
That is extremely rare. And one of the things I was trying to understand, why was that the case for this particular family? He was English educated. I wonder if that made a difference in his way of thinking. Now, one more piece about that. In talking to, because I had access to about three or four actual founders, it was really hard to get to talk to them. But I was very lucky in that way. I was able to interview them. And watching one father and son in particular, the father was 80 plus, he was 50 plus, the successor was 50 plus. And I noticed how the son gave face to the father.
Right.
It was a very subtle dynamic. As I was talking to them over, you know, dim sum over tea, and he sort of would correct his father and then say, "Isn't that right, Dad?" And the father sort of kept quiet. And then sometimes he would help his father remember certain things. There was a lot of face giving and caretaking in a way that really continued to show respect to the father. That was quite unusual. That particular pair of father-son was one of those examples that I had in my study of very successful transitioning across cultures.
Of the father letting go.
Yeah, the father had not let go, but the son was able to hold on in such a way to negotiate the dynamics so that he can take over without the father letting go, but still take over.
Right.
Gotcha.
It was a very subtle kind of thing to happen.
And I just want to confirm your that point you made earlier about how their identity is intertwined with the business, because any time where, you know, the subject of is breached of redesigning, say, the business card or letter hit, get tremendous resistance.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yes, from the MD.
Yes.
because...
I just had a flash of perhaps brilliance. How does your mother do it? How do the women get through to your father? Maybe there's something in that that might work. How does he get convinced? Study that on a almost like a psychological process. Mm-hmm. How does he get convinced? Learn that, and if you're able to stomach it, try and see if that works.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of face giving. It's a lot of working
with.
Yes, that's right.
A lot of patience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And also resigning to the idea that maybe after you put in all this work,
mm-hmm.
That the idea is not going to be weighed based on merit, but based more on emotion, and just be resigned to that fact.
That's right. Mm-hmm. The meritocracy is something for you to then implement when you actually have the right given over to you. And good luck with that if you become the new patriarch, because I find that it is a challenge, because we're still traditional in some ways.
Yes. Yeah. And I noticed something that I'm doing on a daily basis is I'm making a list of things that I don't want myself to repeat or mm-hmm. to perpetuate
mm-hmm.
If at all at a time I find myself holding the reins.
Right.
So that's a list that's growing longer on how not to be a boss.
Right. Right.
But thank you for sharing. Anyway, I think I better get back to work.
Are your calls being monitored?
Maybe, I don't know.
But thank you very much for calling on. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a good day.
You too. That was great
mm-hmm.
To have someone, just to call it. Mm-hmm. While Ong was talking about himself and, fitting in as the successor, I have a question on family businesses. And as an outsider
mm-hmm.
coming in as an mm-hmm. employee,
yes,
there
yes.
are challenges as well.
Yes, absolutely.
We'll just talk about that up next. If you have a question for Dr. John Benn, give us a call, 0377-109000.
You're listening to BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Dr. John Benn Loy, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist, with me. We're discussing dynasting, which is, this how this whole family-owned businesses have these succession plans. How many generations does it really last? We have someone on the line. Let me see who it is. Hi, who's on the line?
Hi, Anna here.
Hi, Anna.
We'd like to ask, Doctor, about that three-generation wealth from the family doesn't last three generations. Mm-hmm. Is that true? And another thing, I'm actually running a business that is handed down, and I find the pressure, how to release the pressure, how to live up to people's expectation of you to be as good as the first management. The
person who started the business, who was probably, your dad who started the business?
My mom, yeah.
Your mother.
My mom. Mm-hmm.
Any questions for her, Dr. John Benn?
I think in terms of three generations, wealth doesn't pass more than three generations. 富不过三代, right? In Chinese. It is something that we have observed. One-third of families... family businesses passed down to the second generation, and then one third of that, which is less than 10%, gets down to the third generation. And so it doesn't really cross three generations without hard work and really working on it, especially on the family relationship side. In terms of taking over your family business from your mother and how to release the pressure, as you say, or live up to expectations, that's a very hard one. That's a very hard one. Right away, the first thing that I can think of is you need to be yourself.
Okay.
That's really, really important. Because when we begin to try to live according to somebody else's expectations, we can't be the best that we can be. I think in Malaysia I'm fairly successful in my own sort of capacity as a family therapist. That's because I went and decided this is who I am.
Anna, could you just switch off your radio, please? Okay.
Oh, can I listen through the radio?
Yes, you can.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine.
All right.
Thank you. All right.
So it's really important to know who you are and live out of the best of who you are. That doesn't mean you can't go for further training or further education or employ good people, you know, to manage things for you. We can all learn, but to live out of somebody else's expectations is going to be very stressful, and it's not going to be sustainable. Your body will break down because that's not who you are. It's not who you're designed to be. Finding your own voice, finding your own way of doing things. For instance, he's going to kill me because I'm talking about him on air, but my eldest brother is oh, well, I'll send him the podcast.
It's all right. It's a weirdo.
Yeah,
anyway.
He's Dato' Loy.
Okay.
And he runs the Taylor's, you know, education group. Yeah. He's really carved out his own way of doing business. He is a businessman. That's who he is. He's an entrepreneur. He loves doing that. And he's done it very differently to how my father, you know, did his business exploits and entrepreneurship. They are different, and they won't necessarily get along. But because my eldest brother was able to kind of really forge ahead with his principles and his vision, he built, I think, which is something really successful, with a strong philosophy and very, very good quality education being provided to our country and also beyond now in Singapore and I think Vietnam. I'm not too connected with the business. So being yourself is really, really key, but also learning out of who you are and creating that. Part of the challenge also will be to manage other people who continue to tell you, no, you got to do it this way, you got to do it that way. You can get coaches, consultants to be able to help you, yeah, to do the business well on your own terms. And I am a businessman now. I own and operate a Syndrome Berhad. It really should be a clinic, but it is business, you know, in a small way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then again, business environments are changing.
That's right.
You need to innovate. You need to move on anyway. Yeah. So it's convincing the founding fathers as well as to what you're really doing.
Or mothers.
It? Yeah. Or mothers. Exactly. Yeah. In Anna's case, it was the mother.
Yeah. And I want to say one thing about resources, if I could just point this out to all the callers and people listening. If you're interested in my theory, dynasting, you can just type it in Google, D-Y-N-A-S-T-I-N-G, dynasting. And then if you want to put my last name, Loy, down, you can see the whole dissertation for free. Mm-hmm. And don't be overwhelmed. Go straight to chapter 5. It's a nice read.
I was overwhelmed.
Yeah.
You didn't tell me till just now that I had to zoom into chapter 5.
You can download it for free and read chapter 5. It's quite informative. And then the other resource is Family Business Network Asia. That's, I think it's fbnasia.org. And there's a lot of resources there as well.
Okay. You had a message for Ong earlier on.
That's the message,
okay,
you know.
As to where he can read it.
That's
just
right.
Very quickly, we're running out of time. Just one last question. And as I mentioned earlier, this whole idea of an outsider coming into work for a family-run organization isn't really the easiest thing.
No.
And I think corporate governance is something that family businesses have to deal with when you have other people working for you, people outside the family.
That's right.
What are your thoughts on that?
It's really, really important if you want to grow your family business beyond just a small mom and pop business that you sort of institutionalize, if you will, good corporate governance with clear paths of, what's the word for it? It suddenly skipped my mind, of progression, you know, for non-family executives. Non-family executives work very, very hard. They could sometimes, sell their soul to the company, if you will. Okay. And they need to know that they're not just going to, work all of this, put all of this hard work, and then have some young punk that feels entitled to whatever wealth and whatever he or she wants to say come in and tell him what to do or tell her what to do. So the bigger you get, the more you need to act like a good corporation. You can still be family run. And for those who are family members, in order for you to get into the family business, if your business is big, then you need to have pathways for them to be trained. And it has to be done out of merit, it has to be done out of merit or it's not sustainable. So if you're a private business, you can say, this is a private business, we own the shares, so we can give opportunities for our family business, for our family members to try it out. But if they can't do the work, they can't do the work, full stop. Get somebody else to do it, because the business has its own rationale that needs to be run like a business. Don't run the business like a family, and don't run the family like a business. Mm-hmm. Do both well, and then learn how to integrate or talk across the two systems, the family system and the business system.
Sounds like a whole lot of hard work, really.
It is. It is. Because you're going against nature of, you know, it all collapsing after three generations.
Yeah, just very quickly as well. I mean, I read in your dissertation where you said something about the intrinsic nature of dynasty can also be found in studies of other animal species.
That's right.
Who are you referring to?
Well, actually, I found a study that showed that it actually said family dynasty, talking about birds. And it said that when birds had resource-rich areas, right, they tended to dynasty more of that species. That species grows within the resource-rich areas. So that gave me the clue that this dynasting phenomena is not just about family businesses. It can apply to all animals. Once, if I have resource, I'm going to give it to those that I give birth to, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And so that creates kingdoms, yep. dynasties. Mm-hmm. And it's a natural phenomenon. Democracy is unusual. And we really have to fight for it,
yep.
you know, for it to take place so that, but the natural phenomenon of dynasty will happen. It's a yin and a yang. It's a balance between those two phenomena. Right.
So
that's
we hope
what
to,
I think.
Of course. So we hope to pick up this whole dynasty thing in the political scene as far as Singapore and maybe America is concerned, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm. I'm Malaysian.
That doesn't matter.
Okay.
Yeah. We talk about everyone else but us. Thank you very much. Your takeaway on dynasting, Dr. John Benn.
Yeah. Sometimes people think dynasting is a bad word, especially if they're not from family businesses. It's not necessarily a bad word. It's just a normal thing. As a family therapist, I want to talk to everybody, not just family-owned businesses, but how are you dynasting the good values that you have to your children? It's not just about wealth. There are other resources. There's moral resources, ethical, hard work, those kinds of values. The more good values you pass to your children, then maybe you can build a dynasty of goodwill, mm-hmm. Good practices that could benefit whole generations and a country.
Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
Dr. John Benn Loy, US licensed marriage and family therapist on dynasting on The Bigger Picture BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.